The late poet Frank O'Hara once described his friend, the painter Larry Rivers, like this. Larry entered the scene like a demented telephone. Nobody knew whether to put it in the library, the kitchen, or the toilet, but it was electric. Rivers became one of the most prominent figurative painters to emerge during the period of abstract expressionism. As critic Carrie Rickey put it, he wedded representation with abstraction, parodied art history, anticipated by a decade the concerns of both the pop and color field painters, and prophetically engaged in what postmodernists might call appropriation and deconstruction. The first comprehensive international retrospective of Larry Rivers' work is currently on exhibit at the Corcoran Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. I spoke with Rivers in 1992 after the publication of his memoir, What Did I Do? He said in his book he doesn't have the faith in self that abstract painters need. I asked him what he means.
I'm not the kind of painter who thinks, well, I did it, therefore it's got to be good or has meaning or things like that. And so if I put down an orange and a blue and put a line through it and then a big square shape and things like that, I felt as if they're something necessary in carrying that off that I didn't have. I didn't sort of believe in it that way. I didn't really know what art was about in a certain way, or I still don't. You know, I'm not trying to be cute, but I don't really know what exactly it is about. And I can only get at those things that interest me. And I think I must also have something in my nature that wants people, more no matter who, from what part of life and things like that, to get something from the work.
Mm-hmm.
Something.
Now, often when you paint a figure, there's like a feature that's missing, you know, like
yeah.
There's one eye, but the yeah. other eye is kind of blank. It hasn't been painted at
right.
all.
Yes.
How did you start doing that?
Well, I think there was a certain spontaneity in my work. In other words, if no matter what I was doing, I wanted it to come off sort of quickly or without too much trouble. And, you know, as yet I hadn't arrived to the point where I wanted things to look labored and that I really did a lot of hard work, which would be a reflection of a certain kind of good character. So the first eye, you don't have to worry about where you're placing. I mean, you just put it down somewhere below a brow or something like that. But when you come to the second eye, you really have to make calculations about how wide they're apart. There's no way of putting in a second eye unless you're Picasso to make them realistic without sort of real close judgment and changes and things that would slow you down, would make your hand work, let's say, from the knuckles instead of an arm movement. And I think that I just left it out at first. For those reasons, I didn't think it was necessary, really, what it amounted to. And I think there are other parts of the body missing, too, but people notice it in the face because the face is so clearly an image that we know all the parts of.
Something else you've done throughout most of your career is write on paintings. Sometimes the letters are stenciled, sometimes handwritten.
Yeah.
Sometimes parts of letters are missing or blurred. How did you start using words on paintings?
Well, I think that, don't forget the Cubists had the word journal. I mean, they would have a newspaper in their painting. So in other words, I didn't do anything that was that, new. The only thing is, I think I was bolder about it and didn't hide it in a certain way. And then it also, in certain paintings, it's almost the point of the painting. I did these vocabulary lessons, which obviously are words and features. And I thought that that's something. I thought there was something sort of ironic, I suppose, in all that. And please forgive me for trying to be ironic, but that was one of the reasons. Also, my hand is a very artistic one in the sense that I make gestures with my paint, and they're like loose flowing and things like that. Whereas a letter has sharp edges, and it's very much more definite than the painting. So the combination of this very definite thing plus this loose, you know, arty kind of work with colors all over the place seemed to make me happy.
You married when you were pretty young.
Yes.
Your girlfriend got pregnant, and that's right. How you ended up getting married. She already had a son.
Right.
But you didn't want a family. In fact, you wrote, "My life was not going to be about living. It was going to be about art."
Right.
So you felt pretty trapped by having a family.
I guess so. I given my personality, I probably didn't even feel trapped. I nothing was going to stop me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've felt a little bit something. Don't forget, I never really gave them up, and eventually I really brought them up. I brought up these boys and lived with the woman's mother. I lived with my wife's mother. I didn't live with the wife. So it's complicated looking it over. I mean, I was not going to be stopped from what I wanted to do, but at the same time, I wasn't going to abandon the boys or, you know, the mother. And we lived together, and they were very helpful in many ways.
Do you think that you couldn't have become an artist without being somewhat selfish?
That's right. I think I modeled myself on my distorted notion of what Picasso was about. I thought that somewhere along the line I had heard that, without reading it somewhere, that Picasso, you know, walked away from every relationship and children and things like that, and all that life was about was art. And I felt that that model was something that it was of interest to me.
Looking back, do you think that you behaved badly toward your family?
Some people might. I don't think I behaved badly. I made up in one way I was sort of, you know, on my own, selfish, things like that, but at the same time I provided for them. And so it's not very different than what most men are about. They go to offices 8-10 hours a day, and they come back and don't bother me. They're looking at television or a newspaper, they're drinking a beer or whatever it is, and then the child walks in, they give them a 2-minute kiss. Maybe once a year they go somewhere for 3 weeks or something. I don't think life is that different, you know, among for myself and other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My guess is
selfish. I would never deny that I'm selfish, but I can make a case for everybody being selfish.
Mm-hmm. My guess is the artist Larry Rivers. Now, your mother-in-law, who you lived with for many years, you painted her naked a couple of times.
Yes.
And I'll just describe her physically briefly. She's you know, an older woman, kind of heavy, an almost what we'd describe as peasant-like body.
Okay.
Is it fair?
I never heard that expression about a body.
Go ahead.
But anyway, you mean the painting that's in the Whitney Museum? It's Birdie Twice?
Birdie Twice, Now, why did you want... You know, it seems like a real taboo, don't you think, to paint your mother-in-law naked?
Well, I told my mother-in-law, if you read the book, that part, I said to Birdie, she sort of said, "Why do you want to paint me?" You know, she had the simple notion that an artist wants to paint beautiful things. She looked at herself. She didn't think she was beautiful. So I said, Rembrandt painted older women. I forget her name. Anyway, she's got her 2 feet in a stream, and she has a kind of a gown raised up, and she's not a young woman. Now, you didn't see her breast, but there are others that Rembrandt did where you do see this older woman. I thought that I had a very special opportunity. I was able to get someone that age, close to me, who actually I could really look at and see what was going on. So it had two levels. I painted it to make a painting and things like that, but I couldn't help be aware of what, you know, happens to the body. I was actually amazed that it looked that good. What I mean, I'm talking about on a sexual level. She didn't really seem to me to be unattractive.
Were you uncomfortable, or was she uncomfortable when she was posing for you?
I certainly wasn't uncomfortable. I felt that she maybe the first few times, then she sort of, it was okay. It was a son-in-law, and, you know, she thought that anything she could do to help. Mm-hmm. I told her, you know, that maybe we'll sell that painting, something. So she actually thought she was posing for the good reason, a working-class woman who thought that, you know, we would make some money or something like that. And
did you?
Did I? I think when I sold those paintings, they weren't very expensive and things like that. I made something, sure. But I wish I had a lot of them today. I would have made more.
Now, you also did a naked painting of your son, Joe,
yep,
when he was 14. And
right,
there's a part in your book where he talks about what it was like,
yes,
to be painted by you. And he wrote that he wanted to be immortalized in your paintings, but he didn't really want to hang around and pose nude for it. He was 14 at the time.
Right.
In the painting, he's nude except for his socks. He
right
says his pubic hair was just coming in.
Right.
And then the portrait was shown at the Southampton Gallery in Long Island, New York, and half of the high school from that area had their parental permission to go to the gallery.
Right.
And he was very embarrassed.
In other words, walk into that gallery, they'd have a note from their parents that they could walk into that gallery. Go ahead.
And then finally, the police removed the painting
right
of your son, and he
right
was relieved. And he says to this day he has a twinge of embarrassment when he sees it.
Yeah.
Did you realize he was going to feel that way, that, you know, at the age of 14
no,
it was going to be
no,
kind of embarrassing?
They were all, it was all very jolly, like I suppose a lot of families in which, you know, you don't there's a central pot everybody's dipping into, and that's the sort of the ones that don't speak of the dark things. I think that he may have felt that way, but maybe I even thought about it, but I didn't think it was anything to anything too much to ask of a child, truthfully speaking. And I think he actually, you know, he did. He knew he was a painter, and that's what I do, and that he would be useful. If he was embarrassed, I'm sorry. You know, so what?
You were very close with the poet Frank O'Hara. You were lovers for a while, even though you don't think of yourself as homosexual and have, you know, been married
twice. I was so straight I could be homosexual.
But you're right that you started thinking of yourself for the first time as sexually attractive when you started hanging out in homosexual circles.
Right.
How did that affect you?
Well, how did it affect me? Well, I just said it. To feel sexually attractive is rather pleasant. But I think that I didn't get that. I'm not saying that that's why I got interested in men, but that there was that difference in my existence, that women didn't talk about, you know, some guy with a great ass or, you know, a great basket, as the homosexual talk at that time, and the area around the fly as it's telling you what's going on inside it. But it was sort of interesting. I mean, it brought me up to another level about sex, that I too could be, you know, exciting to someone is really what it amounted to. Now, I really wanted it to be with women. They would go to bed with you, but I never got the feeling that they went to bed with you because you were sexually exciting. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of silly. I feel now like a baby. I can't see how they could have not thought that. Why would they go to bed with me? They wanted to have sex with me. But I never interpreted it that way.
Artist Larry Rivers, recorded in 1992. The first major retrospective of his work is at the Corcoran Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., through August 19th. This is Fresh Air.